There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines, and top debate.
This is The Grill.
Live from Kickers Sports Bar with Tom Urquhart
on DubaiEye1038.
Very good afternoon. Welcome along to The Grill. It is myself, Chris McCarty. Sorry for the little impromptu start there. We're coming to you live from our brand new summer home this afternoon. No, we are not down at Barasti. We are coming to you live from Kickers. Myself, Chris McCarty, joined by the A-team today. The first time that I've brought together both Matthew Fortune and Mark Lomas. Plenty on the agenda as well. The domestic football season may be over, but plenty of international football to discuss. There is the small matter of Euro 2020 qualifying. We're building up as well to the Copa America. There's the FIFA Women's World Cup that kicked off yesterday, and there is the small matter of the final for the UEFA Nations League tomorrow. That will pit Cristiano Ronaldo's Portugal versus the Netherlands. What else have we got on the agenda? Well, there's the French Open, that second semi-final between Novak Djokovic and Dominic Thiem. It is ongoing. I can tell you the Austrian Dominic Thiem has taken the third set. We will give you updates as we go. There's the women's final as well. That pits Australia against Czech Republic. Ashley Barty taking on Markéta Vondrousova. That will see a first Grand Slam champion, whichever way that final goes, later this evening. There is also the small matter of boxing to discuss after a seismic result at the Mecca of boxing in New York City last Saturday. Anthony Joshua stripped of his heavyweight title. Plenty to come then, and I've not even discussed the fact that it's the ICC Cricket World Cup as well. That is ongoing. Day 10, England-Bangladesh. It will be Afghanistan taking on New Zealand a little later today. We'll be joined by Nick Compton. We'll be joined by Owe Shah. We'll also be joined by boxing commentator and journalist Declan Taylor. He's going to be with us, as will Sean O'Shea, good friend of the show. Now, of course, first team coach over at AIK Stockholm. He's going to be live with us as well. 4001 on the text line. You can give us a phone as well. Pick up that phone. Get involved in the conversation. 04871 5500.
You're listening to The Grill. Join the conversation.
Text 4001 or message us for free on the DubaiEye1038 app.
Eid Mubarak to one and all. 8 minutes past three on your Saturday afternoon. It is myself, Chris McCarty, back after a month-long hiatus, so you can forgive the cobwebs. There will be one or two of them, I'm sure, over the course of the next 3 hours. I'm also battling a little bit of a cold as well, so I do apologise. Make sure to keep it locked right here on DubaiEye1038. Let me welcome in my guests, my pundits, my analysts, my sporting gurus this afternoon. I'm joined by the former deputy sports editor of the Mail Online. There is Matthew Fortune. Very good afternoon, Matthew.
Yeah, good afternoon, Chris. Great to be here.
Nice to have you alongside me, but then again, nothing much has changed over the course of the past month. You have been my wingman in the US for the past month.
Indeed I have. I've been your organiser, your putter together, your driver, your booker, everything. I know that's unfair. You did contribute one thing.
Yeah, you have indeed. That's why I've given you the shift this week. We're also joined as well by freelance sports journalists. Great to have Mark Lomas back with us once again. And Lomas, very good afternoon to you. You've been on your travels as well.
I have indeed, yeah. I went to Baku for the Europa League final, Azerbaijan, first taste of that. Final was good.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
We'll talk a little bit about that more later, I'm sure. Baku was good, and I've just got back from Zanzibar as
you
well.
You did so indeed. Nice no sport trip. Watched in Zanzibar, I take it?
Well, I watched some local kids play football,
nice.
But yeah, that's about it.
Okay, fine. Listen, 4001, get in touch with us this afternoon. It has been a while since we have been on the airwaves here in Dubai at 103.8, so we do value your contribution. So much to get through, boys. Obviously, AJ, we'll get to that in a second. I know, Matt, we were ringside for that one last Saturday. We were very privileged to get those seats and watch what was a seismic result. I want to come to you first, though, if I can, Lomas. You said there, Europa League final, that was about 10 days or so ago now.
Yep.
Very quickly, was it as bad as what we discussed, Matt, because we watched it in the States. We were in Boston, big Arsenal fan as you are. You were obviously gutted, Matthew, and rightly so. 4-1 it was for Chelsea. But was it as bad, the atmosphere in terms of the stadium, the spectacle or the lack thereof, was it as bad as the media have made out?
Yes and no. I think that the stadium experience itself was lacking a lot. I was told the day before the game that there was going to be 53,000 people there. That's how many tickets were sold. 63,000 seater arena. So it meant it was a little bit of a dry atmosphere. Lots of patches of empty seats around the stadium, which it doesn't look good visually. I was looking on the monitor in the press box, and you see they tactically try and pan to the busiest parts of the stadium. But really, yeah, the atmosphere was lacking, and that came across on the pitch as well. The first half, in particular, like a pre-season friendly, you know, really, really pedestrian pace, hardly any tackles going in. It was a very odd match, the first half.
I think Pedro was the first man to be booked, was he not, just after the hour mark, and you would have had a long odds on Pedro being the first man in the book. But saying that, what about the atmosphere outside the stadium? Because I know an awful lot was written about Azerbaijan as a host, and we won't go into the political details of all of that. Of course, Henrik Mkhitaryan not able to play due to the ongoing issues between Armenia and Azerbaijan. But in terms of the atmosphere around the stadium and in the city, good?
Yeah, it was good. If you weren't wearing a Mkhitaryan shirt, you were fine. So, you know, a few people got accosted, more like gently reminded by the police they might not be a good idea to wear a Mkhitaryan shirt because of political reasons. But in the city of Azerbaijan, you know, they've hosted big sporting events before. The Grand Prix goes there. They've hosted the European Games, not as massive as this final. But in the city, I would say it felt more like a European away day, perhaps, and particularly when you compare it. You see the scenes in Madrid for the Champions League final, 70,000 fans, you know, or more from Tottenham and Liverpool dancing in the streets. It very much wasn't like that. It was a lot more civilised than that. What I like the idea of spreading around finals like this. I've been to the Super Cup in Skopje, and that was a really good experience. You know, the people of Macedonia absolutely loved hosting Real Madrid versus Manchester United. The people of Baku, the Azerbaijani journalists I spoke to, they loved the fact that a massive European final was in Baku, and it gave people actually from other parts of the world the chance to fly over. You know, there were a lot of people from the Gulf. There were full planes when I flew over of football fans, Arsenal and Chelsea supporters clubs here, from the UAE going. There was one fan who I met who flew from Houston via Doha. absolutely crazy. First ever Arsenal match.
Wow.
Obviously,
probably
his last. A little bit disappointing for him. But there was definitely a feeling, a little bit of a crowd that wasn't necessarily the hardcore support, but they were there and they were enjoying the spectacle. Whether that's what it should be in the final, you know, I would argue against that. There should have been more tickets for the London-based fans.
I think Mark's absolutely right. I have no problem, and it's quite a contrary opinion as a supporter of one of the clubs, to actually give it to these smaller nations and give that chance to spread the game around. The big problem is, logistically, Baku wasn't able, just from the airport infrastructure and the road infrastructure into the city, and that's the biggest problem for me. I don't mind it being in those locations. It's great that people, there's massive Arsenal fans, like Mark says, in the Gulf. I'm not surprised that planes were full going over there from this part of the world. But having a city that is unable to take people from, and especially from England, and especially from Germany and France, where those bigger nations and the more likely finalists are going to come from, where you cannot get direct flights, you have to look at the logistics. The city, the location, I actually don't think that's too much of a problem. It's the logistics of getting there and then getting into the city. And if you cannot handle more than 15,000 people when you're trying to attract 60,000 for a game, it's absolutely insane. That's the big, big problem.
Let me ask you this then. Will UEFA take note of that? Because you're absolutely right, and I'm with both of you. You absolutely need to spread the game. It's the duty of UEFA, it's the duty of FIFA to spread the game across the world, and that takes you to far-flung places. In terms of the lessons learned, though, is there a case now that these smaller nations, they simply need to look a little bit more robustly and whether they've got the infrastructure from an airport standpoint to ferry in these fans and be mindful of where these clubs, and let's be frank, you kind of know where the finalists are going to come from. There's only a handful of nations, probably. They're going to be more mindful of that moving forward?
Well, if the final was CSKA Moscow versus Dynamo Tbilisi, it would have been very, very easy for the
fans.
It would
have been brilliant.
Would have been great for the fans to get there, because a lot of people came by both Istanbul and Tbilisi. I think, you know, UEFA will do some soul-searching. There's a lot of criticism. Obviously, Azerbaijan have paid a decent whack of money to host the final. But I think there will be a little bit of soul-searching from UEFA in terms of seeing how they can at least prepare a plan B. You know, maybe there should have been more chartered flights available. Maybe they should have stepped in and looked to help organise that if the airport can't cope. But you're right, it should be part of the initial logistical planning.
Completely.
To see if, what's this, let's think about this scenario that two clubs from London, two clubs from Milan, two clubs from Madrid play in finals. Like, what's going to happen? And it seems there was no plan B. I think that was the issue.
On the pitch, I want to move away from what's going on. I think lessons hopefully will be learned, but then again, it is UEFA.
Can we keep talking about not what happened on the pitch?
Well, I want to.
The first Arsenal fan. Arsenal season.
You've had one or two sleepless nights. I appreciate that, Matt. Chelsea, we'll get to them in a second. Eden Hazard, of course, big news yesterday. I want to get to that. In terms of Arsenal, because, Mark, and I'm going to oust you here, you, like me, are Manchester United fans. We'll get to that in just a few moments, I'm sure, as well. Daniel James. We will have to get to that and touch on the fact a little bit of
sunlight. It's going to be a self-help group between the three of us, isn't it?
It's essentially what it's going to be between now and 6 o'clock. Have your say on 4001 on that. But in terms of Arsenal, season as a whole, finalist, and then you're absolutely ridden rickshaw over the course of that second half, weren't you?
Yeah, it was a humiliating way to go into a long summer of not much football to kind of distract yourself from it, which is a shame. The problem is with Arsenal, I know you want to talk about on the field, but Arsenal are rotten at the moment. Right from the very top, we have an owner who couldn't be bothered to fly in for our first major European final in 13 years, which is an absolute shambles. You look at Liverpool a few days later, John Henry's on the stage, Daniel Levy's on the stage, even though for the defeated team, Tottenham, just to remind everybody that Spurs also lost a final that week. But Arsenal are rotten to the very core at the moment. We don't have a head of recruitment. We have a CEO who left at the start of the season, who'd spent a lot of time trying to get positions in place, and then you turn out that he's fluttering eyes at AC Milan for much of that period of time. They're giving away contracts for players. We just left Danny Welbeck go on a free a year after a player such as, and I don't mean any disrespect to him particularly in this instance, if Liverpool can get £19 million for Dominic Solanke, who hadn't played in the Premier League, who hadn't scored a goal, and Arsenal are giving away Danny Welbeck, an England international, a scorer of important goals, yes, injury prone, free of charge, Aaron Ramsey free. The structure at Arsenal, it doesn't matter what goes on the pitch at the moment, because fundamentally, at the very core of it, things are rotten. The manager's done okay. He's tried to work things out. He's tried to stamp a bit of authority on the team. Didn't necessarily work early on, dropping Mesut Ozil as he probably should have done, but also keeping Aaron Ramsey marginalised. He has tried and he has made progress, I think, in some areas, but fundamentally Arsenal will not move forward until from the very, very top down to the playing staff, there is changes and people get in for the right positions.
It definitely is self-help. You could just take what you've just said there and slot that into Manchester United. But as well,
I mean, the one thing that I guess United fans have to be positive about is the fact that there's seemingly a large transfer kitty.
But you're not us.
Yeah, but you're reading that Arsenal will have what 40 to 60 million to spend in the summer, and that is not enough, frankly, for what is needed.
Where is the money gone? Where has this famed TV money come from? I don't understand where it goes. And we have an owner who has not put a single penny into the club since he became involved in it. That is absolute madness. You look at Liverpool, you look at Tottenham, and you look at how brilliantly well they're run. John Henry is so interested. He's putting money in. He sees gaps. He has a structure within place at the club, and it's painful for you guys more than it is for me see Liverpool doing so well, because what they have is problems. They address those problems, and it's speculate to accumulate, which is exactly what he did. He spends big money on a good defender and a good goalkeeper, and what happens? Clean sheets all the way through to the final, and a goalkeeper that's not going to drop one in the final.
Yep.
If only Usmanov came in, hey?
Well, that is it, and we will maybe talk about Alisa Usmanov as we go this afternoon. You are listening to The Grill. We are coming to you live, not from Barasley, our brand new home this summer. We're at Kickers. Where is Kickers, I hear you ask? Well, we're down at Dubai Sports City. Happy hour from 3 until 7. And for you guys out there, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know exactly what I mean when I say happy hour. 19 dirhams, 50 fills is all you need to spend. That is how much the drinks are down here. So do pop on down. We are here until 6 o'clock. If you've got anything that you want to add to the conversation, you can do so. 4001. Pick up the phone as well, 0487155500. We're going to be in conversation when we come back with Nick Compton, the former England and Middlesex batsman. We're talking ICC Cricket World Cup. We'll have more on Arsenal, more on Chelsea. Eden Hazard. We'll look back on the UEFA Champions League as well. Tennis, golf, so much to discuss. You're listening to The Grill.
This is The Grill.
Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. Myself, Chris McCarty, joined this afternoon by Matt Fortune and Mark Lomas. We are on your airwaves right the way through until 6 o'clock, and you heard correctly. We are coming to you live from Kickers Sports Bar. We are down here at Dubai Sports City. It is our summer home. Drinks for as little as 19 dirhams 50. 15-plus screens dotted throughout the venue. We've got the ICC Cricket World Cup ongoing, day 10. We've got the second men's semi-final at the French Open, Roland Garros. It is Novak Djokovic, the number one seed, taking on the number four seed, a man who many feel is a champion in waiting at the French Open, Dominic Thiem. Will give you an update on that in just a second. There's the FIFA Women's World Cup. It's also ongoing. Day two of that one over in France. We'll give you updates and look back on yesterday's opening match. France victorious, the hosts 4-0. They beat, I think it was South Korea yesterday. It was. Mark Lomas is across that. We'll give you all the updates on that as we go today as well. Just sticking with the cricket, if I may. England taking on Bangladesh. It is match 12 of this 2019 2019 ICC Cricket World Cup. I can tell you that Bangladesh won the toss. They've elected to bowl. England currently 161-1 after 26.2 overs. Jason Roy, the opener, he's not out. He's closing in on a century, 95 from 90 balls faced. Johnny Bairstow, he's gone. He made his half century, 51 from 50 balls faced. Joe Root as well, he's not out, 11 from 18. And you look at that batting lineup for England, that's why they are one of the favourites. Jason Roy, Johnny Bairstow, then comes Joe Root. Then you've got Owen Morgan, the skipper, Ben Stokes, Joss Butler all the way down at number 6, and then the likes of Jofra Archer, Chris Wokes is pretty handy with the bat as well. There is good reason why England are being tipped to go all the way, but of course they came a cropper a few days ago against Pakistan. Pakistan, they're in action later this week as well. We'll have more on the ICC Cricket World Cup. We are going to be joined hopefully by Nick Compton and Owe Shah as well, the two former England cricketers. Owe Shah, a man who spent time over here as the caretaker UE boss as well. As I say, Matt Fortune, Mark Lomas alongside myself. I want to get back to a footy chat if I can, boys. We were talking before the break about the Europa League final, going back 10 days. Lomas, you were there. Matt, of course, Arsenal fan. Weren't there. Didn't enjoy it much.
Would have been there, so I'm glad I wasn't. On another holiday.
We ended up having to leave the bar 15 minutes early because you were done with that final, weren't you?
Yeah, it's embarrassing. It's so frustrating when you actually look, what I was saying before the break about being rotten to the core, but then you look through the team, actually that starting 11 is not too bad. There's some real quality in there, and a lot of money has actually been spent on them, to be fair. But when your two biggest players, arguably Mesut Ozil and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, sort of don't turn up, really, and stink the place out, that sets the trend immediately. And I think the most cutting thing that happened on that whole day, and that was when we left, was when young Chris Willock came on from Mesut Ozil. That's a kid from the academy. He had more impact in those 10 minutes in a drifting game where there was nothing left to play for than Ozil did in arguably most of the season.
Yeah, congratulations to Mesut Ozil as well.
Indeed.
Wedding. Married man. So he was yesterday, and it was interesting to see who his best man was. We won't get into that, but his best man was the Turkish Prime Minister. Who was our Turkish president? Whose best man was? It was, yes, Matthew. The shocked look on your face at that one. Yes, it was. Mesut Ozil, congratulations to you. I'm sure you're not listening to Dubai 103.8. We wish you well as you go off on your honeymoon back for pre-season training. Talking about UEFA Champions League, though, that was last Saturday. Quite incredible to think that was a week ago now. Liverpool, hate to say it, Mark, but they are six-time European champions. It was a horrible game as well. Deservedly so, champions?
I think so. It was interesting one, I think, because I think probably the worst I've seen Liverpool play in the past. Think how well and how solid they played over the past 3-4 months of the season. Some incredible performances, particularly in that second leg against Barcelona. You know, you're expecting Liverpool to come in and dominate the game. They just didn't at all. You know, Spurs did look, I think, the more likely to score. They just couldn't quite carve open those chances. They had so much more possession. But, you know, that's what champions are made of. And I think, you know, particularly after losing out in the Premier League title in such heartbreaking style, you know, I think the onus was there with Liverpool to go and lift the Champions League trophy, and they did that. They were more ruthless, you know. They put away their chances, and they're the six-time champions, deservedly so.
I think I know what you're going to say on this. If I asked you two boys whether it was a penalty, you're going to say yes, definitely it was, said the Arsenal fan. And I'm sure, Mark, you're like me. The penalty is questionable. 30 seconds in to the final,
irrelevant. Completely and utterly irrelevant when it happens. I'm not going to do as you say. Actually, I'm still not utterly sold. I do question the sensibilities of a player standing in his own area with his hand at a T-junction to the rest of his torso. I think that's silly. Regardless of what he's doing, you have to be switched on from minute one. I don't think it matters when that happens. If someone takes a goal kick and someone sprints towards them and two-foots the player and kicks him off,
of course,
in the air,
fair.
It's a red card. You can't just say, oh, he probably got to his head a little bit in the early stages. Of course, it changes the complexion of the game early on, but you just can't be doing things like that. And you shouldn't punish stupidity. You should punish by the letter of the law. And by the letter of the law, I do think an unnatural arm position, the ball strikes the arm, it stops it going where it was supposed to be going. So I do think in that instance it probably was
but
a penalty.
This is the issue with this. Consistency is all I ask for. Now, it's interesting you say probably wise to give it, and you're absolutely spot on in actual fact. Looking back on what I just said, complete nonsense. Whether it's 30 seconds in, 90 minutes in, you're absolutely right. A foul's a foul. Steve Bennett, reached out to him straight away, and I'm pestering this man, former Premier League referee, 10 years plus experience. He said that he knows it's a real difficult one, but why is his arm so high when the other arm is down by his side? VAR support, as it's not a clear error by referee, and he thinks the referee probably made the right decision. Here's where I have an issue with this. Consistency. I go back to, which game was it? Cardiff Burnley, Turf Moor. Cardiff needed to win to stay up. centre half for Burnley, Ben Mee, similar. It ricochets off his chest and hits his arm. Mike Dean waves it away because he can see that it's not intentional. It hits his chest first, rolls onto the arm, he waves play on. On that instance, it's not given. In this instance, Champions League final, it's given. It's consistency.
Take the occasion out of it, Chris. It's not relevant where it is, when it happens. Doesn't matter if it's Champions League final.
But I'm saying consistency. So poor Cardiff would have had a chance to have taken a lead in a match which they were battling to stay in the Premier League. And here we have an instance where, having that decision not been given, Liverpool are given a decision. And I'm not just going hell for leather because it's Liverpool. I'm just saying that consistency is what we ask for, right? There needs to be consistency across the board.
But then maybe we'll see that more next season when, you know, if we have VAR rolled out across all the leagues and, you know, using it regularly, seeing decisions like this happen more regularly, I think consistency will come. And actually, I'm going to surprise you as well, Chris, and I also think it was a penalty.
You know,
he stood inside the area, and exactly as Matt said, you know, if you're in that defensive position, you've got to be aware that even if you're pointing to your teammate to get in place, if you're pointing to your teammate with your hand high above your head, that is a risk if someone hits the ball at you.
3 foot away from the player with the ball. I mean, it's mad.
And I mean, I love some of the stuff I've read about that. You know, he aimed for the hand. And so what? You know, he's perfectly entitled to do it. If he did aim for the hand, then fair play to him. You know, he's perfectly entitled to do that.
You would do exactly the same thing. I think if it's a sliding tackle and there's a loose hand coming out and someone slides past you, I'd probably try and play it off the hand if it was on the floor, because that's just smart.
Showing the character that you are, Matthew, is essentially what it's doing. But you're absolutely right.
Sneaky.
It's sneaky, is what it is. So Liverpool victorious, 2-0 in the end. Divock Origi stepping off the bench to make it 2-0. For Liverpool moving forward, I mean, you've already touched on it briefly. They've got their house in order. Barry Hunter, there's Edwards there as well, who's doing a wonderful job from a recruitment standpoint. They're just a football club going in the right direction. It's Spurs that I want to discuss now, because Mauricio Pochettino, who should be Manchester United's boss, or at least Manchester United should have made much more of an effort to entice him to Old Trafford, but that's by the by.
He'll be there in October, Chris.
You reckon? Yeah. I'm not sure myself. Where do Spurs go from here? Because they get to a Champions League final that, let's be frank, I don't think the most hardened of Spurs fan would have expected at the start of the season. Does Daniel Levy, do they spend? I mean, you will probably turn around to me and say they've not got money to spend after.
They have to find it from somewhere, though. They have to. If they want to continue on this upward trajectory, they have to twist. You have to look at Arsenal. Go back 13 years. Arsenal make a Champions League final that they probably had no right to make at that time. They get beat, heartbreaking circumstances. No investment. Yeah. Tricky time for Arsenal, though. It was the summer before we moved into the new stadium, so we definitely didn't have some money. Same reason that Tottenham don't have any money at this moment in time. But you have to twist, because you have to show ambition. You have to kick on. You have to make the most of the fact that there is a great, great excitement within your club and start attracting people to it. At that time, Arsenal were, on paper, the second best team in Europe. I know that we weren't at that time, but you could have attracted so many players. Look at this shiny new stadium in a brilliant city, a manager who wasn't quite fallen off the wagon at that point. Yeah. Top players were still there. Pires was there, Henry was there. Pires left that summer, Henry left a year later. It was the time of the youth project, completely the wrong time to do that, at a time when Chelsea were investing millions, Manchester United were reinvesting because it had been a couple of years since they had won the title. Mourinho had come in at Chelsea and was taking things forward. Tottenham now are probably in quite a fortunate position, in so much as Arsenal, Manchester United are really, really struggling. Chelsea are still a little bit of a basket case and not necessarily got their house in order. So Spurs don't have people breathing down their neck like Arsenal did at that time, but they still need to make sure they show ambition. The news that Christian Eriksen wants out, that there are a number of players that they could get money for, I think they have to cash in, because they have to find money from somewhere to take a step forward.
I mean, they're suggesting well over £100 million pounds for Christian Eriksen, which would, you know, he's been such an important player and an important part of this Tottenham team, but you have to look at where the money's going to come from to invest in the team, and it does seem like Spurs are going to have to sell before they can buy. So getting over £100 million for Eriksen, you reinvest that into good young players, maybe not quite at his high standard yet, but you know, I think that would be wise. Pochettino is a difficult one. You know, where does he go? I don't think there's a natural move for him right now. Again, you talk about maybe stepping into Manchester United in October. Perhaps if Zinedine Zidane has a bad start to the season with Real Madrid, that's a job that would appeal to him halfway through the season next season, the Real Madrid job. But you know, where does Pochettino go? Juventus, all intents and purposes, getting Sarri. It's a difficult one. You know, Spurs are, you know, an attractive club now. They're a great new stadium. They're finishing the Champions League places. They've reached the Champions League final. I do feel like part of Pochettino must think, how much further can I possibly take this without any investment?
That's it.
And that, you know, for his own reputation, maybe that's where there'll be decisions to be made. But I just don't see a natural move for him at the moment from Tottenham.
Of course, it's not all doom and gloom, because there'll be one or two Spurs fans maybe in their cars thinking, well, what on earth are you boys banging on about? We've just reached the UEFA Champions League final, for goodness sake. But it is interesting, Christian Eriksen coming out to say that he feels it's time for a new challenge. Clearly, and I hate to use the word tapped up, but clearly his agent is feeding him some information that there are one or two clubs out there that would be keen to bring him, whether it be Manchester United. I know Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a confirmed admirer. Real Madrid, for some reason, does it, a year ago I would have said yes. Now, I'm not so sure.
I mean, I have my doubts about the Real Madrid move, only because, you know, they've just shelled out $150 million for Eden Hazard, linked with Kylian Mbappe as well. It's not an endless supply of money at Real Madrid. They can't just keep dipping in and keep buying players. There has to be some level of balance in the books. I can't imagine buying, and we talked, I think, last time I was on the grill about, you know, Eriksen and Hazard aren't the same player, but, you know, I think investing that amount of money in both Eriksen and Hazard, I'm not seeing how necessary that is. I think they'd be better off spending that money on a world-class striker like Mbappe, really.
Absolutely. Luka Jovic has joined as well. Money is being spent massively by Real Madrid. I want to get to Eden Hazard as well as we go this afternoon. Still so much to discuss. I want to give you an update on the tennis when we come back as well. We'll keep an eye on the cricket. Going to be looking back on the last 10 days as well with Owe Shah and Nick Compton, hopefully, over the course of the next 2.5 hours. Sean O'Shea as well, former head of football here at the Nadelsheba Sports Complex, now first team coach of AIK Stockholm over in Sweden. He's going to be with us after 5 o'clock. Declan Taylor as well, the haters journalist, he's going to be joining us at 5:30 to talk all things Anthony Joshua, that in the wake of one of the biggest shocks in sport in the last few years, no doubt about that. Keep it locked right here, Dubai 103.8. If you've got anything that you want to have your say on, get it into us, 4001, join the conversation. You can also pick up the phone, guys, 04 871 5500. Stay tuned.
This is The Grill, live from Kickers Sports Bar, where the game is always on.
Welcome back to the show. It is myself, Chris McCarty, Mark Lomas and Matt Fortune on your airways right the way through until 6 o'clock this evening. It is The Grill. Our summer home is the Kicker Sports Bar down here at Dubai Sports City. This is where we will be all the way through June, all the way through July, and who knows, we may be here for August as well. Want to get a quick update, if I can, from the boys. Let's start with the French Open. It should be about now where we should be welcoming on the two female finalists. Not so. The reason for that being is yesterday's second men's semi-final has carried through until today. Weather, adverse weather conditions yesterday. It was blowing a hoolie, as we would say in Scotland, blowing a gale at the Roland Garros. They're on court today. Dominic Thiem, Novak Djokovic. Mark is keeping an eye on it for us.
Absolutely. Djokovic currently just serving to stay in the match. So he is. So 5-4 to Dominic Thiem in the final set. They've exchanged a couple of breaks each. It's got blowy again out there, and Novak Djokovic doesn't like it. You know, yesterday when the match was postponed, a lot of people suggesting that player power maybe was a factor there, and Djokovic had actually already left the arena before they'd even made the official decision to postpone it.
I watched it. He did. It certainly looked that way, Mark. He said, "I'm having none of this." I think he went 3-1 down in the third set. He picked up his bar, picked up his towel, and walked straight off. And Dominic Thiem was kind of left asking the umpire, "What's going on here?" And that was it, done and dusted for the day.
He looked a little bit better, Djokovic, when he started today in the third set, getting back into it and winning back the break. But then it was a topsy-turvy 12th game in the third set that Dominic Thiem ended up winning to win that set 7-5. But that was a great final set. Juice exchanged time and again. I think it was about 15 minutes long.
Wow.
The final game of the third set. And again, as I said, a few breaks exchanged in this set. And Djokovic has just held. So we're at 5-5 in the fourth set now.
5-5 in the fourth set. Novak Djokovic bidding to do the Novak Slam for the second time. He is aiming to hold all four of the Grand Slams at the same time for the second time in his career. Quite incredible. But he faces an uphill task to book a place in tomorrow's final, where, of course, the winner of yesterday's opening semi-final, Rafael Nadal, he beat Roger Federer also comfortably. Federer struggled with the conditions, struggled struggled with the topspin, as he so often does against Rafa Nadal. He had come into that match, in actual fact, having won his last five meetings with Nadal. But of course, as we know, Rafa is a different animal on the red stuff over there at Roland Garros. He will be bidding for a 12th French Open title, and that would take him on to the magical figure of 18 Grand Slam finals. That would put Grand Slam titles, that would move him to within two of the Swiss maestro himself, Roger Federer. That is the tennis. I want to talk cricket now, if we can, because I'm conscious a lot of you out there are massive cricket fans. Day 10 of the ICC Cricket World Cup, it is ongoing. England taking on Bangladesh as we speak. 185 for one are England. And I'm delighted to say, and this has been a while since we had this man on the show, joining us now live from the UK, our good friend, former England Middlesex batsman. He's a man who is foraging his way in the media world as well. It is Nick Compton, and we'll say a very good afternoon to you, Nick.
It's a great afternoon. I'm feeling really left out by you guys. I haven't heard from you for ages, but I'm glad the love is back.
Yes, the love is very much back, Nick. I woke up this morning, I thought, we're talking ICC Cricket World Cup. Who on earth can we get today to offer proper insight? I thought, there's only one man for the job, and I messaged you at about 5 a.m. because I'm still suffering from jet lag from the US, Nick. But listen, let's talk about this ICC Cricket World Cup if we can. Day 10 today. Let's start with this match. England against Bangladesh. Must win for England. I say must win. Coming off the back of defeat against Pakistan, they wanted to bounce back. Doing so with a bit of panache thus far. 185 for one. They're well in control of this one.
Yeah, I think they've been smart coming back into this game. I think they knew that they were up against a bit of early spin. Shakib Al Hassan, the Bangladeshi all-rounder, the number one all-rounder in the world, actually, in one-day cricket, obviously been very dangerous, doesn't get a lot of turns. So I think England have been very watchful against him. He's only bowled seven overs for 34 runs. He hasn't taken a wicket. So I think there's definitely been a ploy to give him the due respect that he deserves. But as I said, that Jason Royce has cleared his front leg and smashed him through the offside for four. But, he is on 100. So, it shows what you can do. I think this World Cup is almost becoming a little bit old-fashioned in terms of trying to really build a foundation early on, having wickets in the bank. The wickets have actually been quite juicy. And I think that's, for me, it's made it a better spectacle because, as we know, one-day cricket has been so dominated by the bat.
It certainly has. There's no doubt about that. And you look at some of the scores that some of the teams are piling on in this World Cup. I'll go back to that June 3rd match between Pakistan and England if we can, because England, yeah, 334 for 9, a decent knock, but my goodness, credit Pakistan. England, what was it, 15 wins in their last 16? Pakistan couldn't buy a win, and then they come up with a performance like that.
Yeah, they did. And I think there were some differences. I think if you watch the series that England played as a precursor to this World Cup, the Pakistani team were lacking a lot of their left-arm quicks, and it just shows how variation can play such an important role in this team. I thought Wahab Riaz's recall, although he can go for runs, he's surely a character, and he has got some extra pace and bounce. And, at the moment, pace and bounce seems to be the order for the day. I mean, there's been some good pace and bounce from the West Indians who have, were lucky not to beat Australia. I thought Australia got away with one there. But, the likes of Jofra Archer, who sort of bowled, with a lot of pace against South Africa. There's a lot of unsung heroes here, and they seem to be the short fast pitch ball has been the one that's getting the wicket. So I think for England, coming back into this game, they had to play with some sort of maturity, and I think they've done that very well. They haven't gone too gung-ho. They've kept wickets in the tank, and it looks quite ominous now.
Just on the subject of Jofra Archer, an awful lot said, an awful lot written in the build-up to the World Cup over whether his inclusion was the right one for this England team moving forward. I know that the tournament is now 10 days old, but is the decision looking justified from what you've seen, Nick?
Yeah, I think there is a justified decision. I mean, look, the guy's got X factor. It's something that, you can't just ignore. And I think that, yes, the likes of David Willey, Liam Plunkett, who's been an important cog, both been important cogs in terms of England getting to number one status and having the success they have. But unfortunately, times do move on. A guy like Jofra Archer comes onto the scene. He's got pace. He's got some of that X factor that England probably have lacked if there was a criticism of England. So you can't ignore him. I think the only thing I would say is that it's in typical English fashion to, talk someone up so much. The guy's played, he hasn't played a lot of international cricket. So, let's just, keep our feet on the ground a little bit. He is exciting. He does have the ability to bowl 90 mile an hour. He's got a fantastic action. But, to expect him to go out and win England the World Cup, I don't think we want to get ahead of ourselves. He is going to have the odd bad game. He didn't bowl brilliantly against Pakistan. You know, they sort of tried the short pitch bowling, and Pakistan had more passion. It was great to see. I think that's what we love about this World Cup, is the crowds, the partisan crowds coming out. I mean, Bangladesh, for one, they've got great crowds. You know, the Pakistanis showed real passion, real fire, and I think that's what we know. That's what we sort of associate with Pakistan cricket, and it's nice to see them, you know, bouncing back and playing in their inconsistent ways, as we know.
Yeah, it makes it for a good World Cup when Pakistan are playing at the top of their game, no doubt about that. One of the other big stories, Nick, that I want to touch with you on is South Africa, because their woes, what is it? They've lost their opening couple of matches, in actual fact, and I know an awful lot has been said. In fact, they've lost their opening three matches, lost to England, lost in unbelievable fashion to Bangladesh, beaten as well by India. So they've lost their opening three matches. Interesting to read in the last couple of days as well that AB de Villiers stuck his hand up couple of days before the World Cup to say, I'm ready to play in all of this. Management said, no, that isn't in keeping with where we want to take this team. I mean, what are you reading into all of that? Would you have picked AB if he had phoned you and you were the leader of that management team?
Well, listen, I always believe you play the best team available, you know, in whatever form. It doesn't matter. I know South Africa have some political issues that we've known about for many, many years. But I think watching South Africa from the outset, it is disappointing. I think this is something that has been coming for a while. You know, the South African cricket team, you know, look at their rugby team, you know, things don't look in a great place at the moment. And it is very worrying. Someone like AB de Villiers, I understand from a management point of view, you know, you can't really pick and choose which tournaments you want to play in. But I think this is a World Cup. We are talking about AB de Villiers. Arguably, a World Cup isn't the same without a player like that. You want the best players showcasing their talent. I do know that AB de Villiers and Faf du Plessis, there's a little bit more going on there in terms of competition. You know, there's no doubt that, you know, Faf du Plessis, Otis Gibson would have had a decision to make there. And, you know, I think when you've got a player of that class and caliber who can make such a difference to your team, I think it's silly not to have got him in. You know, obviously the management have gone a different direction. They're trying to build a team without AB de Villiers. They don't want it to be centered around one player. But I think very disappointing. I think South African cricket is a worry. I just think, really honestly, you know, we can look at behind the scenes, we can look at, you know, some of the noises that are being made. I don't think the team is good enough. You know, man for man, comparing to other teams, I don't think they're good enough. And it might sound a bit harsh, but so, you know, and players have got to be informed. You know, Hashim Mamla hasn't been the same one-day player as he was in the past for the last 2 years. His averages are significantly lower. You know, there's a lot of emphasis on the likes of Faf du Plessis and Quinton de Kock, you know. And, you know, I think there's too much pressure on them. There isn't the firepower that we've seen from traditional South African one-day cricket.
One of the other stories that caught my eye, Nick, and it was just actually looking at the schedule of this 2019 edition. India, an interesting one there, because they won their opener against South Africa. That was South Africa's third match of the tournament. Now, India didn't start off their campaign until June the 5th. Something a bit wrong there. Is that just pointing towards the power that the BCCI have and the fact that India got a little longer in camp to prepare for this World Cup?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a surprise. You know, Indian cricket do run the world of cricket, and, you know, I think it wasn't just them who played in the IPL. Lots of English players played in the IPL, and lots of other overseas players played. So, yeah, I don't really buy that. There's probably a little bit of a helping hand there, but, you know, fundamentally, we've got to get on with it. I think, you know, India have had a bit of a fortune there. They did look fresh coming into the game, and I think most teams could have done with an extra week off, to be honest with you. So, yeah, look, that'll be discussed long into the night. You know, I don't work for the ICC, so I really can't comment on how that worked or what was done. But all I can say is that, you know, looking at the favourites, India's certainly up there. They've got all their bases covered. They look very impressive against, yes, a weakened South African team. But when you look down that order, the only question mark I have over India is if the likes of Sharma or Kohli don't come to the fore, you know, because they get so many runs, the others almost get slightly neglected, you know. So when it falls on some of the other players, can they come up with the goods? That'd be the only question about the Indian attack. I think in terms of their bowling, they've got Jasprit Bumrah, who for me is probably the number one bowler in world cricket, white ball world cricket at the moment. Phenomenal bowlers, and they've got two fantastic spinners. So I definitely think between them and England, I would say one and two, and then I would sort of almost put Australia maybe three And it would be great to see the West Indies resurgence. Mm. You know, I just love watching them play. You know, when they get their wickets and the celebrations, and you know, really, they should have put Australia away the other day.
Yeah, that's interesting. You mentioned West Indies. Mark Archer tipping the West Indies to be the dark horse. I've gone with Australia, in all honesty, Compo, with Steve Smith coming back in, David Warner. They've started well as well. They made the 288 against West Indies. They easily reached 208, I think was their target against Afghanistan, making 209 for three. They would be my tip. If I was asked to push you and give us a name of this winner, who will it be?
Look, I'm going to stay with my team, of course. I'm going to support England. I think that playing in a home World Cup is tough. It comes with its pressures and what have you. But I think this is a different England team. You know, in the past, there's been a little bit more hope surrounding conditions and surrounding, you know, let's just hope timing's right. I mean, timing couldn't be better. I think that the cricketers are ready to win a World Cup. I feel that if they won, it wouldn't be a shock whatsoever. I think they're the best team in the world. I think they deserve to win this World Cup. However, as we know, mate, once you get to the semi-finals, you come up against a Pakistan team like they came up against the other day, and your World Cup's over. So we all know that it isn't that easy, but I do want to put my money where my mouth is and say I think this England team will go all the way.
Oh, there we have it then. Nick Compton, former England batsman backing England to win the World Cup. And I tell you what, if England do go on and win it, I won't begrudge them, because as you rightly point out, over the last 12, 18 months, the job that Owen Morgan has done has been quite exceptional. Before we let you go, Compo, got to have a quick word on what you're up to during this Cricket World Cup, because of course you've moved into the realm of media. You're doing what so many pros do now and try and steal our job. So what are you up to? What can we do? Where can we hear you? Where can we read some of your stuff?
Mate, I've had the best mentors in the world, hey? And you guys have taught me very well, so thank you. I'm hosting my own little World Cup radio show on Love Sport Radio. It's on DAB and online, and of course, there's a few stories flowing around to watch that. There is a podcast, it's on iTunes, Nick Compton's World Cup show, so do tune in. It's a little bit of fun. It's an hour every day from 10 till 11, and look, I'm enjoying it. I think it's great. It's nice to look at the game from a different perspective and, you know, have the opportunity to speak to players and people in different, you know, we've had a rugby player, with Will Greenwood, a World Cup winning rugby player for England, you know, just giving us a perspective on, you know, what it's like preparing for a World Cup, being favourites and going out there and having to perform, you know, and it's different from, and how it differs from, you know, just playing a regular series. So, you know, lots of insight, mate, just like you, and, you know, finding it really interesting.
Good stuff, Nick. I'll tell you what, I'll be stealing that little black book off you as well, I think, with Will Greenwood as well. That's decent. That's good, my man. Well, listen, all the very best. I'm sure we'll be in touch with you over the course of the next couple of weeks as well. Of course, this ICC Cricket World Cup, it basically goes on and on and on, and it wraps up as early as 2022, I think it is. But listen, Nick, bless you, my man. Thank you very much for spending the 10 minutes, and we'll catch up with you again very soon.
Cheers, buddy. Thanks, mate. Take it easy.
Great to speak to that man, Nick Compton, good friend of ours on The Grill. I was waiting to say Off Script. He's a good friend of Off Script as well, Sports Tonight, and all the other guises with which we have on Dubai 103.8, former England and Middlesex batsman. I want to ask you boys, listening to Nick there, he makes the fair point about England, favourites undoubtedly on home soil. India, with the fact that the BCCI, Nick's words, not mine, basically run the ICC, they'll have a chance. Pakistan, good on their day. Australia, so much strength and depth.
Absolutely. You led him into that a little bit, Chris.
Yeah, I did.
Excellent journalism.
Yeah, I did.
I mean, obviously, I'm an Englishman. I'm really hoping that England do the business. It's the first time, I think, for a while that we've come into a tournament really feeling like England can actually do it at this Cricket World Cup. The Pakistan result shows that anything can happen, exactly as Nick said, in the World Cup, and I would be fearful about coming up against Pakistan. It is amazing how every single tournament, they are the ones who are just inconsistent, and you just can't, consistently inconsistent.
That's it.
And you can't predict them. You don't want to be coming up against them in a tournament, as they showed the other day. So, yeah, you know, I don't want to put nail all my colours to the mast with England, but I think this is the best chance in a long time anyway, and I really hope they do it.
You're going back for it, are you not? No, that's the Ashes.
Yeah, I fly back now. I fly back for the third test at Old Trafford, going to 2 days there, which will be good fun. And that's the one thing that I think maybe might not necessarily distract. Of course, the playing staff are different, but just with England with one eye on what is, I would suggest, it's not their more important focus, of course, because the World Cup and it's
top. Well, let me ask you that in actual fact. That's a good question. Mm. ICC World Cup glory or an Ashes series success against Australia?
That is a tough one. It's a good question.
I think I know a lot of Australian people who would be more heartbroken by the Ashes. So again, a blot on my character is that I'd rather win that, so I've got a bit of gloating rights. No, I think the Ashes just maintains that degree, and it is the 5-day version of the game, which I think just shows a little bit more nous, a little bit more quality. You're dragging over such a long period of time, yeah. And I just think against the Australians, and especially because of how the Australians are with the controversy beforehand, with Warner coming back in, with Smith being part of it as well, I think the English fans, and that's half the reason I'm going back really, because there's nothing like a good old raucous English crowd to get on the backs of the Aussies, and they thoroughly deserve it, to be honest. I think it will be a real boom for England if they can win.
So you've gone Ashes. Would you go Ashes as well, Mark?
It's a tough one. I don't know. I think you know, it's been a long time coming getting some 1-day silverware for England. So yeah. I think, you know, this, as I said, this is the best, feels like the best opportunity in so long. I would really like to see them follow through, and I think for this year, I would say let's bring home the Cricket World Cup.
I tell you what, I'm going to put this out 4001. I know we have an awful lot of Pakistani and Indian listeners, so let me ask you this question. You win a World Cup, and this is for our Indian and Pakistani listeners. You win the ICC Cricket World Cup, but you lose your next 100 matches. Maybe 100's a bit much, because that goes on for probably the next 50 years. 100 beyond that. Okay, you lose the next 10 matches against your bitter rivals. 4001, let me know. You win the World Cup, but you will be forced to lose the next Big Ten against your bitter, bitter rivals. 4001, let me know your thoughts on that one. We will keep an eye on this match. It is ongoing. Joe Root's gone as well, so England have lost their second wicket. They remain firmly in control, though they've motored on to 212 for the loss of two wickets. Interesting to hear Compo as well talk there. Almost in T20 terms, it's about keeping wickets in hand. It's about building your foundations, and in that final 10 overs, if you've got six, seven, eight wickets in hand, you then turn it into a T20 and you just blast.
Absolutely,
for the boundaries.
But then that's what you mentioned there. We've seen some of the totals that have been posted already in this tournament. Absolutely ridiculous. You know, records being broken left, right and centre. So yeah, I totally see his point there.
It is the modern day game is what it is. And I'm sure with you at the Test Match Arena, you'll see some sixes as well, because that's just the way it's going. Concentration and focus out the window.
Hopefully not too many.
Well, I did. I went back for the previous Ashes series as well in the UK, and I think I saw two wickets drop all day. It was an utterly dull day. David Warner scored about 110 off about 400 deliveries. And it was slow, painful, awful.
I think the word you're looking for there is attritional.
There was I lauding the 5-day game and then complaining about the very thing that almost makes it quite interesting.
It's the attritional nature of Test cricket, which we also love, of course. Get in touch with us on 4001. Let us know as well your thoughts on favourite. Always difficult to put out favourite tags, but do let us know who you think will go on and take success in this ICC Cricket World Cup. I'm looking on our other screens, of course, 15 plus screens dotted around Kicker Sports Bar. It is our summer home for the Grill all the way through June and July. I'm switched now and I'm looking at the tennis. We've gone to a fifth set.
We have gone to a fifth set indeed. Team looked absolutely fantastic in the fourth set, but Djokovic wrestling it back to 5-all, getting the break and then seeing it out 7-5 in the fourth set. So we are in the final set. Team one up at the moment. Djokovic 30 love up on serve. So going all the way.
What that does mean is that women's final will have to be moved back even more. Ashleigh Barty taking on Markéta Vondrousova, the young Czech girl as well. I believe the youngest, I think Jelena Ostapenko a couple of years ago, she was the Latvian, she was unseeded. And, well, she is bidding to follow in her footsteps as the young Czech. She goes up against the Australian Ashleigh Barty. We'll have updates on that as and when that one begins as well. So we'll keep an eye on the tennis, keeping an eye on the cricket for you as well. I'm sure there's golf somewhere as well. The US Open, it starts on Thursday, does it not? Pebble Beach is where we're headed to as well. So we'll maybe talk a little bit of golf as we go this afternoon as well. Just ticking around to 4 o'clock, you are listening to The Grill. We are coming to you live from Kicker Sports Bar.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.